through the dead of night, seeking out broadcasting injustice wherever it appears. Only one man can wield it. Media Bat with Tim Bat, only on 95 BFM.
Hello, Tim.
Kia ora.
How are you?
I feel sick.
Oh, no.
But not sick, like contagious or anything.
Okay, good. Not in this pandemic.
Stayed up too late, woke up once to the alarm, then fell back asleep, then woke up frantically to the second alarm. I was like, I gotta get my ass to BFM. And you know when you like get up too quickly?
Yes.
I don't know if everyone has this, but it just makes me want to spew. Like it makes me sick to my stomach.
Well, thanks for giving us the play-by-play.
You're welcome. The point is, I was here on time.
Had I not said anything,
you wouldn't have even known.
Hey Tim, what's happening in the media at the moment?
I've just got two stories for you today because one's quite meaty.
All right.
And I kind of want to get into it a little bit. So the first one on the local front here in New Zealand, off the back of a counter-terrorism hui in Christchurch last month, which was organised by the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet and included representation from our major media organisations in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we've now got a set of protocols on counter-terrorism reporting that have been created and published. Here's a little comment. NZME's Mariana Alexander, who's the chair of the Media Freedom Committee, which is like a joint committee across
media outlets.
She's also the head of premium content at NZME, so she's a bigwig. Sort of suggested in some of her comments that this could be the first set of such protocols of its type in the world.
Wow, we were.
The protocols have been formed off the back of discussions between media and the government that have been happening ever since the Christchurch terror attack. The document itself is called the Terrorism and National Security Event Media Protocols, and it says that news media will act responsibly and cooperatively with authorities throughout events. And it's actually a pretty short document. Like, I read the whole thing. It's just a 4-page PDF. Few grammatical errors in there as well.
Oh no.
Or more punctuation actually.
Uh-oh.
It's like a random capital after a comma. I'm like, guys, get a proofreader. This is supposed to be like, anyway. Nothing in it is like super hard hitting.
Okay.
I'll give you an example of how most of the document is sort of worded. So this is working principle number 5, quote, "It is recognised that social media and the internet allows instantaneous publication of pictures, video and information as events unfold. The risk of publishing unverified information is understood by media who will exercise appropriate judgment on such publication." So a lot of the principles that are outlined in there are, the media understands this, government understands this and will attempt to do this. So it's like kind of not super binding wording, you know, but it's just coming to a, I guess, plain English set of understandings that are written down, which you can give emerging journalists who are new to the field or what have you, and they can quickly get up to speed with what the appropriate protocols are, which is good.
That seems like a useful document. And how are people responding to it in the media?
I personally haven't seen anything.
Okay.
And, I mean, that's A, probably not great, but B, in some ways, like, I hate to sound like a bootlicker, but it's kind of nice to be in a country that has such a high degree of confidence in the government that the government and media can effectively collude together to create this document.
Mm.
And we don't really hear too much about it. Because, if we're taking this from a tinfoil hat approach, you could definitely gin up a big angry rant about this. If anyone has, I don't share it. I think this is a good thing. It's a useful thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important document that'll help media going forward. So
maybe that's, I mean, this is all speculation as well, but maybe that speaks to sort of broader context about how people feel about the publishing of things in the wake of a terror attack. And, you know, that was such a new experience for us as a country when that happened, that I think people, as like readers and as a audience to the media output, felt quite strongly about how the media around that was sort of handled. So maybe this is a recognition that people actually agree that there should be perhaps some basic guidelines about what you should and shouldn't maybe be doing in the wake of something as awful as that.
Totally. There was a big national conversation that happened in the wake of the reporting of the Christchurch terror attack, and I think we eventually reached some pretty broad consensus around what should and should not be done. For example, the centering around people who are affected and victims, and deplatforming, effectively, of people who are committing these atrocities, so not publishing their name, not publishing their photo, not sort of glorifying the acts that they've done. So it's nice to sort of codify this into some protocols, even if they are, as I say, not super hard-hitting and super binding,
it sounds
but just
more
to form
kind of
an
like
understanding.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds kind of more like one of those sort of... Yeah, like a gentleman's agreement kind of thing.
Yeah, if you will. We need a non-gendered version of that, eh?
A gentle person's agreement.
There we go. So the second thing I wanted to talk about is a little update on the Friendly Geordies case in Australia.
Yes, please.
So I brought this up probably about 6 weeks ago now. This is an Australian legal battle that's happening between New South Wales Deputy Premier John Barilaro and a YouTube comedian slash political commentator called Jordan Shanks, who goes by Friendly Geordies as his handle online. Over the last 12 months, Friendly Geordies has been producing some in-depth videos lobbing claims of corruption at the Deputy PM. And there's a real hilarious one where he rented out John Barilaro's property because it's on Airbnb.
Oh
like
my
this
God.
Huge sprawling estate, and recorded a video in there while he's like in this lush bathrobe outlining all of these charges against Barilaro.
Oh my God, that's
which
amazing.
I think ultimately was the video that got under his skin. This culminated in some legal action going forward. So Friendly Geordie's 21-year-old producer randomly ran into John Barilaro at a public park. This was after Barilaro had served Jordan, but the team more broadly, with some legal charges of defamation. There were some details in there that didn't make sense to the team, and they thought were actually incorrect in the legal filing. So Friendly Geordie's producer, who randomly saw John Barilaro, bowled up to him with the document in hand, said, "Hey man, like, can you tell me about this bit?" And in response, Barilaro filed stalking and intimidation charges against the 21-year-old and had an anti-terrorism unit remove him from his home. The unit injured the family dog and bowled over his mum in the process as they took him away to be processed legally. Now, the legal case that Barilaro is pursuing is a defamation case against Friendly Geordies himself. And there's some incredibly high-powered lawyers working on both sides of this, as you would expect. Mm. Friendly Geordies, through his lawyer, who's a QC, Matthew Collins, told a court that Jordan Shanks, this is his real name, he's, quote, chomping at the bit to defend the defamation charge and present a truth against the defamation charge.
Oh, so wow, okay.
Charges of defamation, there's a few defences that you can use to protect yourself legally, and one is that what you said was true.
Yeah.
Seems like a fair thing to be able to level back.
Yes.
Is it true or is it not true? Let's work that one out.
Exactly. So even, I think in America this actually might be slightly different. I know it is with corporations. Like, even if you have a true statement but it causes some financial ill effect to, like,
right,
a corporation, they can still sue you for damages, I believe. Like, the case can still go forward even if you're telling the truth.
But that's in the States,
that's
not
in the States,
Australia.
Not involving people. We're talking about Australia. Yeah, you did right. So one of the core charges of corruption that Jordan lobbed at Barilaro on a video that's wound up in court involves this $3.5 million oyster farm, and that there was a transaction that happened which John Barilaro claims he was at arm's length away from, but it appears that was not the case. Jordan Shanks has claimed that as a result of that alleged mistruth being said, Barilaro perjured himself 9 times.
Crikey.
In Parliament. However, this has run up against a barrier in court because the 9 times that the alleged perjury statements were made by, yep, Barilaro are protected by parliamentary privilege. So Geordie's lawyer has said that lifting the privilege, quote, would require an act of parliament to revoke privilege, something that Collins said his side had requested the deputy premier to arrange unsuccessfully, as you would,
whoa,
imagine, because it's clearly not in his interest to,
yes,
lift that privilege, which is protecting him in this precise court case involving himself. So the presiding judge,
this gets more nuts.
The case is really interesting. It is a little bit curly and there's a bit to read up on. But if you're interested in this sort of thing, and you know, this is there's a lot of bullshit discussion around freedom of speech and discourse around that at the moment floating around.
A couple of texts to that effect have come and post our previous story. I'll say mostly the texts are great, but you know.
What's one that is
giving them airtime, but I'm just acknowledging that they're there.
Hey, listen. Diverse views in this country.
There are.
You know, we want to hear them as long as it's, you know, like, useful broadly. The presiding judge in the case, Justice Rears, has reserved his decision on whether or not those statements can be entered into the case until a later date. So it's a really interesting case. Friendly Geordies, if you want to Google it, there's been some good, pretty in-depth write-ups, particularly The Guardian have taken a keen interest in this and are going through the legal sort of wranglings of everything that's happening. So if this spins your wheels, get in a bit of that.
It's fascinating, and it is, as you say, curly. There's a lot to get stuck into there, and it's also, I think, it's weird because it's such an internet thing in some ways as well. It feels like an internet story because he has this online platform. But if it was
Here's the thing about that though, Rachel, and I've been hearing this a lot recently. This like division that we used to have between the internet and the real world, it doesn't exist anymore.
This is that was kind of the point I was going to get to. I was like, but I think maybe if we were seeing this happen from a journalist from a different place, there'd maybe be more of a broad understanding of what was going on here, but because he's a YouTuber, maybe that's part of the limiting factor.
And ultimately, like, Jordan Shanks is a comedian who makes political content online. I don't think even he would necessarily describe himself as a journalist, despite the fact that the dude and his small team are producing some incredibly high quality short documentaries.
Wow.
I watched one that was like, I think almost an hour long, super complicated issue about water rights and how basically there are these farmers in Australia who are like stealing water and it's completely crippling certain floodplains and ecosystems in New South Wales. Really interesting stuff, but they've got the resources to kind of pursue this stuff and go quite deeply with what the government's doing. Anywho,
that is a meaty one. Thank you for bringing it to us.
You're welcome. While I'm here, quick plug.
I was about to ask.
If I may.
Of course.
Got a stand-up comedy show happening on Tuesday, hosted by me, headlined by none other than Di Hemwood. Becky Umbers, Heta Dawson are also going to be on the bill. It's called Hump Comedy. It's on a Tuesday. So if you're like, you got a job that maybe you don't particularly love at the moment, it's cold out there, you get through Monday, you get through Tuesday, break up the week.
Yes.
Come see some live comedy. It's at the Fridge and Flagon, which is in Eden Terrace. It's just down from Galbraith's. If you Google Hump Comedy, or you could go to timbat.co.nz, you can grab tickies from there. I'll see you there on Tuesday night.
See you there. Thank you, Tim.
Bye.
Come back next week for another exciting adventure on Media Bat, only on 95 BFM. All right.